sorry.
Sometimes it hurts so badly I must cry out loud.
I am lonely.
I am yours. You are mine. You are what you are.
Good morning. This is Pep Talk, Pensacola's expert panel with Meg. Hope you're having a good start to your day today. So pleased to have in the studio with me this morning Terrence Gross with Gross & Schuster. He's a regular on Pep Talk and has been for many years, a talented attorney in our community, state-certified arbitrator, board-certified civil trial lawyer, handles personal injury cases. He has his own firm, of course. His sons are involved in the firm. You have quite a legacy here in Pensacola. So welcome to the show, Terry.
Thanks a lot. It's actually been 46 years. It's hard to believe it's past that.
Gosh, that's amazing. You start when you were two?
No. But I was 25. I went straight through. So I was 25 years old. But that brings up my topic today, because in this 46 years, I've seen a lot. What I've also seen is how the law has changed. And it's only changed in one direction. And the direction has been emphasized and steered by the lobby of the insurance companies in Tallahassee. So when we hear the word tort reform, I guess what the insurance companies want you to believe is that these lawyers are out of control. They're ambulance chasers. We need to pass laws to curb these greedy, blood-sucking personal injury lawyers. But what you don't see is the negative impact it has on the claimant, the citizen that's been hurt due to the negligence of another, and that's who really gets hurt with tort reform. And the insurance companies just make more profits and so forth. And I have example after example after example I'd like to share today. So where do we start? Well, I became a lawyer in 1979. And in 1979, if Meg caused a wreck and hurt my client,
yes,
I could sue Meg, and I say her insurance was State Farm. I'll make that up. And we could sue if we couldn't settle, and the name of the case would be my client, you know, Jane Doe, versus Meg and State Farm Insurance Company. So if we went to trial, the jury would know that Meg rightfully has State Farm Insurance Company.
Gotcha.
Well, that's when 1979 when I began. In 1981, they passed a law. It didn't seem like a real big deal at the time as a young lawyer to me, but it was called the Non-Joinder Statute. It's still on the books. And the non-joinder statute says if you sue a defendant, you can no longer name that they have insurance. So the name of, if I happen today, it'd be my client, Jane Doe versus Meg.
Okay.
So it may not seem like a real big deal to you, but I can tell you, in the course of my career thereafter, there have been two or three occasions where the jurors, in the middle of deliberations, have sent a note, because they're allowed to send notes and questions to the judge if they have a question. And in two or three cases, they've asked, does the defendant have insurance? Because we're not allowed to tell them. So they're already worried. Wait a second. That Meg sure seemed nice. She seems so nice. I know she rear-ended the client, but she was, when she testified, she seemed like such a nice person. And
didn't do it intentionally.
She didn't do it intentionally. And we don't want to hurt Meg. We don't want her to have to pay all this. And so what the whole purpose of that law was to tamp down jury verdicts and get jurors maybe concerned about poor Meg, even though Meg's got tons of insurance because she's listened to Terrence on this radio show so much. She's got full coverage. So she's
learned a lot.
Yeah, so she has plenty of insurance to cover, but yet they don't know. And I'll tell you a true example.
And they still won't be allowed to even ask that question to pass the note? Or once they pass the note, is it allowed?
No, of course not. And the judge will, there's an answer. Every judge has the same answer because it's kind of written in a book. And the answer is, that is not for your concern. your to base your verdict on the law and the evidence that you heard. So in other words, no answer.
Mm-hmm.
And if I were to blurt it out accidentally, what if in the middle of the trial, in the heat of the moment, and I say, that insurance lawyer's argument is insane. Well, as soon as I say that, the judge is going to call a timeout. He's going to take my head off. He's going to dismiss the case.
Is that a mistrial then?
Call a mistrial. Mm-hmm. And you come back 6 months later, have to retry it all over again. And I probably will get held in contempt and fined in a big way. But let me tell you how a negative impact. So that law passed in 1981. Well, in 1986, I found myself in the courtroom in Okaloosa County in Shalimar. And I was representing a young Navy guy that had a severe neck injury when a little old lady had rear-ended him while he stopped at a red light. And the little old lady had tons of insurance. I mean, this lady was insured.
Okay.
But the name of the case was My Client versus Little Old Lady. So I can't mention that she's got insurance. Well, the defense lawyer decided he was going to one-up that. And this lady was in her 80s, and she had the perfect silver, bluish hair.
Looked like everybody's grandma.
Everybody's grandma, sweet, with a little cane.
Oh, my goodness.
And the whole case, he kept on calling her the widow lady.
Oh.
And I said, Judge, I finally went got a sidebar of the judge. I said, Judge, this is now the third time I've objected. Every time he's purposely trying to garner sympathy from the jury, he keeps on calling the widow lady. She has a name, and he keeps on referring to as a widow lady for only one reason. And I can't mention insurance, but he can mention that she's a widow lady. And I said, this is, you know, patently unfair. And we ended up getting a bad verdict, which was no surprise.
Right.
Given that, because I think the jury became more worried about us seeking these damages from this poor grandma.
Well, it's so biased, but also they don't have all the information.
Well, but you're not allowed to give it. But I won on appeal that widow lady language. Because I objected, I preserved it.
Mm-hmm.
And on appeal, the appellate court says Mr. Gross is right. He was garnering sympathy over my objection. And I got a new trial on that, and the case later settled, but I didn't go to trial twice. But anyway, it just goes to show you that in the whole purpose, this was designed. All these laws get passed by the legislature, but who is lobbying them? It's the insurance company. And I tell you, one of the biggest eye-opening experiences I ever had was I did go to FSU.
Mm-hmm.
FSU is in Tallahassee. It's the state capital.
Right.
And I remember my first spring. So I started in, you know, August or September. When March rolled in, I go, what the heck is going on? Every restaurant was booked.
Right.
Every motel was booked. And the party began.
Lobbyists.
I mean, the lobbyists moved in and the politicians moved in. And the party began, with unlimited payroll. And so you and I are not in Tallahassee lobbying for whatever. It's the State Farm, Nationwide, Allstate, Geico. And it's the biggest lobby, by the way, in the state of Florida. So the insurance lobby is the biggest, you know, second to none. And so they are able to get a lot passed. They certainly openly fund these politicians. In fact, when we used to dig in the weeds on this, and there would be these advertisements, political advertisements for maybe some legislator that's running for office.
Mm-hmm.
And this ad paid to you for the concerned citizens of Florida.
Right.
Well, then if you go back, who are these concerned?
Insurance?
Yes.
Insurance.
But they don't even call them. It's not sponsored by Allstate AL. It's sponsored by the concerned citizens
with big
of Florida.
Quotes.
Yeah, right. and it's just a shell name for the insurance industry. So This has gone on and on and on. So that's still good law. Do we have a question?
No, I just wanted to take a second here in case someone just joined us. Well, this is Pep Talk, Pensacola's expert panel. We're talking with Terrence Gross. He's Gross and Schuster, a very, as you can tell, an experienced attorney, especially with personal injury, and talking about tort reform. I find this fascinating to see how this has changed over the years.
And if you wish to call or text, you can call us at 850-437-1620. If you text, Meg will repeat your text, and I'd like calls if we're able to do it, but it's always fun. But whatever, I'm going to be on for extra time today because we're doing a makeup show, so I'm actually on for an hour versus the usual half hour.
So we have plenty of time for your
questions. And I got plenty to talk about on the subject, so I will not run out of time there. So anyway, that was 1981, this non-joinder statute. 1986 was another big year. And in 1986, a lot of things happened, but one of them was the passage, and I'm going to make it easy for layman terms. Lawyers don't call it this, but we instituted what is known as the loser's payroll. Lawyers call it proposals for settlement, whatever, but it meant this. So up until then, let's say I'm representing Meg. She's the plaintiff. She's been rear-ended. And if we went to court before 1986 and for some reason we lost, maybe they didn't believe Meg, maybe it was her third accident, maybe her car bumper didn't show much damage. For some reason, the jury just didn't like the case or believe us, and we lost. Well, what happened to Meg? Nothing, because the lawyer's operating on a contingency.
Right.
So all the hundreds of hours the lawyer spent, Meg pays nothing. If the lawyers spent tens of thousands preparing and going to trial, Meg owes the lawyer nothing because that's the contingency fee.
Right.
You pay the lawyer nothing, even if not even the out-of-pocket expenses, you pay nothing. So it's a gamble always on a lawyer's part. But it wasn't a gamble for the defendant because there was no skin in the game. Well, after 1986, they said if the insurance company files a written offer and you get 25% less than that, so they offer you, let's say, $50,000 and give or take, you know, say the jury comes back at 30, well, that's certainly less than 25%. So even though they say you won, they give you 30, you on paper lost, and you would therefore owe the insurance company that you sued. You got rear-ended, you sued the person, but it's really the insurance company. But even though you can't name the insurance company, you have to pay the insurance company their attorney's fees and costs that could be six figures.
Wow.
Depending on the case. And all of a sudden, you go, what? I lose the case. So imagine the chilling effect that has as we approach trial and one of those things filed. I got to call the client in, give them the riot act, and say, look, I think we're going to win this case, but
if we don't,
we could lose. And if we lose, this is what happens. And a lot of people freak out.
I guess so.
And the purpose of the law was to do what? To get good, average day citizens who are hurt, but recognize that maybe provability, just because you're hurt, proving it could be another thing. You must have a text.
I do have a text. So just from one of our listeners just texted in, this non-joinder statute seems unfair. Someone plows into me. What are pluses and minuses of no-fault insurance?
Well, I was going to talk about that a little bit later, but I can tell you the plus, it doesn't change no-fault. All no-fault is, you can understand about no-fault insurance. People overplay when we say we're no-fault, say, what do you mean no-fault? They rear-ended me. Forget that. People overthink it. It's so simple. All no-fault does, it was a mechanism that was put in 1971 that said that if you get hit, that 80% of your bills up to $10,000 would be paid by your company. Because back then, a lot of people didn't have health insurance. Even today, I'm still surprised, even with Obamacare, how many people still don't have insurance.
Right.
So it's a way for you not to get all these bills and go bankrupt, you know, ambulance bills, emergency room bills, get most of them paid. So 80% up to $10,000. And in that no-fault limit, they also have your wages at 60% that you could, you get some of your wages back. So it's just a stopgap measure. So we still are an at-fault state. And so when we say no fault, it's a bit of a misnomer,
gotcha.
A little confusing.
Mm-hmm.
It just means that regardless of fault, if you are driving by yourself and you've been drinking and you hit a tree
mm-hmm.
and you get hurt, your company pays 80% of your bills to 10. You're hurt in a car. All you have to do, where you're hurt in a car wreck, yes, you don't get into the fault.
Interesting.
Yeah, because okay. when we get into the fault thing, that could take years to figure out. Sometimes you get these, I had a green light. No, I had a green light.
Right. And disputes.
And that could go on for years. And meanwhile, mm-hmm. you owe bills. So this was just a stopgap measure passed back in 1971. But 10,000 medical bills in 71 was a lot of bills.
It was like 100,000 today.
Today, you go ambulance to the ER, you're over 20,000.
Wow.
So it helps a little bit, but the no-fault thing is just mm-hmm. don't overthink it. Just don't overthink it because we still are an at-fault state.
Interesting.
I still have to prove that whoever it was at fault. So
okay.
don't get confused by that.
Okay, great question. Right. And if you've got a question for Terry, clearly he is the expert. 850-437-1620. We'd love to hear from you.
So we talked about the non-joiner statute. Another statute that was also passed in 1986 was a medical malpractice cap. And for those of us that really have a long-term memory, they even got the doctors on board. So you go to the doctor's offices, and it said, vote for this amendment. I think it was called Amendment 10, if I remember right. And it was to put a cap on attorney's fees in medical malpractice cases. And, of course, I don't blame the doctors. I was sympathetic to the doctors because, you know, I'm sure their malpractice premiums are through the roof. In fact, over the years, I've had many, many friends that are surgeons, either OBGYNs or surgeons, and it's not unusual for a surgeon to pay over $100,000 a year in malpractice rates, where my malpractice for four lawyers is only $12,000. So it's only, you know, it's $3,000 a lawyer, which I think is pretty cheap for lawyers. But some doctors pay a lot. So I'm sympathetic. But anyway, we must have a caller.
We do.
Okay, so I'll go back to my topic in
okay.
a minute.
Okay, so remember that topic. And we have a caller on the line. David, welcome to Pep Talk. Good morning to you.
Okay. Yes, I have a question here. A new field that may be coming forward, and that is electric cars burning down people's houses. They park them in the garage, and at night they catch on fire and burn the house down. I know a two in Pensacola that's happened to.
Wow, I've not heard of that.
To do something about that. Yes.
Any thoughts on that, Terry?
Cars.
Well, yes, and actually, we may know the same case. I have a dear friend in Gulf Breeze whose house burned down due to his electric. He had a Lexus in his car. There was a storm, and I think it was actually Sally, I think it was. And something happened. There was a surge. House caught on fire.
Gosh.
Which usually during a storm, your house doesn't catch on fire.
No.
And it burnt. And there was a big dispute. And he had to actually have a lawsuit over that because, you know, was it the electric surge? Was mm-hmm. it the hurricane? Was it this? Was it that? But anyway, if that happens, that's why on your homeowners, you have fire. So you better have homeowners so that, and then. If there was a defect, your homeowners, if they paid, they could subrogate. So actually, if their homeowners wanted to, they could go against, whoever, Tesla or mm-hmm. or maybe there's a battery, Acme battery. What if the battery chargers are made in China?
Right.
And they're just defective? Well, then you could bring a claim against them, you know. But yes, there would be a chance to do that.
Okay. David, thank you so much. We're about to run out of time here, but we appreciate you calling into Pep Talk this morning. Thank you. Okay.
And speaking of time, you can let me know at any point. I know you got to
give you the signal
for ads. I know we got to get some advertisements in. But I was on medical malpractice. So again, they passed the medical malpractice cap, which helped doctors, which I was sympathetic to the doctors. But the wolf in sheep's clothing, once again, is the insurance company. So mm-hmm. they were getting all this money from the doctors. And every time you have tort from you, there's something strange that happens. Somebody loses something. So with the non-joinder statute we talked right. about, the plaintiff loses the ability to tell the jury that there's insurance. Does those savings, every time we get something passed, do the savings go back to the consumer? So we just had a real big tort reform package in 2023.
Mm-hmm.
My car insurance rates didn't go down.
No.
Nobody's did. Where does that money go? To the coffers of the insurance company. So every time they get something passed, they make more money, but it doesn't get passed back to the person that allegedly was injured. So anyway, the medical malpractice, I think they put like a $500,000 cap for pain and suffering. Right after that happened, two cases came out, and I believe they're both out of Chan's Gainesville, I think.
Interesting.
So there's a man with a cancerous leg.
Mm-hmm.
The doctor says, we have to save your life, and unfortunately, sir, we're going to have to amputate your leg. And he goes, oh, God, okay, I want to live.
Right.
Do it. He wakes up after surgery, and after he finally gets his senses, he realizes they cut off the wrong leg.
You mentioned this before.
Oh, yes.
Oh, my God. What a nightmare.
They cut off the wrong leg.
Oh, my gosh.
So they still got to cut off the other. So instead of being a single amputee, now you're a double amputee.
Wow.
And it's like, here's $500,000. Have a good day.
Oh, my God.
So that people don't realize it's the severely injured person
mm-hmm.
that gets the short end. You're not penalizing the lawyers per se. And it only hurts the big claims. At the frivolous lawsuits, if there's a $500,000 cap, it doesn't affect the frivolous lawsuits,
sure.
right? It affects the real injury.
Case like that.
Quadriplegics,
yes.
death mm-hmm. cases. And then about that same time, another case came down where a baby was being born, the doctor's delivering.
Right.
And oops, he drops the baby on the head.
Oh, my
gosh. And brain damage. The baby lived.
Oh, that's
but
awful.
Now you got what would have been a healthy baby is wheelchair-bound and
for life.
And brain damaged.
Oh, my
and
goodness.
And that's what the parent gets you. All the joy and elation of pregnancy and having birth right there. And it's like, here's $500,000 for the rest of this baby's life. Have a nice day. I mean, so anyway, fortunately, it took years. It took about a decade.
Mm-hmm.
But the Supreme Court rightly overturned that as unconstitutional.
Well, thank goodness.
But it took a long time. And many people were forced to take or settle for that $500,000, you know, while it was still on the books. So these are just examples. I can keep on going, but I bet you were getting close
we're
to
getting close. I'll give you the signal in just we got about a minute or so left. We've
right.
got several questions that have come in, so I'm hoping that folks can stick around after the news this morning because Terry is going to stay with us. And if you just joined us, we're talking with Terrence A. Gross. He's with Gross & Schuster. 46-plus years of experience and certainly is giving us a fantastic lesson this morning on tort reform and the history of law in this area and how it affects all of us very personally.
Yeah,
great information.
I have many more examples. If you are texting, we'll get to you. If you're on the line, she'll get back to you. But I'm kind of hesitant to get started.
Right,
something.
We've got about three or four texts, so we'll get to those, like I said, right after the break. And we've got just about a minute left. You'll hear that outro music that starts to play. That'll be your cue.
That's the cue.
And before we go, if folks are listening this morning and thinking, wow, I really would like to talk to you about a case I've got pending, how do they get in touch with you, and what's the best process?
850-434-3333 or visit us on the web at grossandschuster.com.
Gross and Schuster. And how do you spell Schuster?
S-C-H-U-S-T-E-R.
Okay. This is Pep Talk, Pensacola's expert panel. Terrence A. Gross is here with us, and it's a special treat because he's going to be staying with us for the next half hour. So you've got plenty of time to get those questions in, and all you have to do is text them in at 850-437-1620. So we've got just a couple seconds here, and then we'll be going on to the news, and we'll have Terry back with us in the next half hour. So do text in those questions. Again, that number, 850-437-1620. This is Pep Talk, Pensacola's expert panel. If you're riding in your car today and you want to take some notes, but you just can't, you can always re-listen to this program on our podcast page. Just go to newsradio923.com. Click on podcast. Click on Pensacola Expert Panel. Terry's name will show up first today. You can click on that and re-listen to the broadcast. This is Pep Talk.